It's a gentleman by the name of Jack D. He is from Greensboro, North Carolina. He is a family counselor at the fellowship home there. And he is married to Joan. Here we go. Jack.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Jack Donovan, and I'm a grateful Al-Anon member myself. Have been for a long time. Thank you. It's nice to be here. I didn't think we'd ever make it, I must admit, on the way up from Greensboro. It seemed like it's an awful long ways to Jackson Mill. But I am very happy to be here. I'm one of those, as they call, surprise seekers, because I didn't know I'd be speaking when I came up here. It perhaps was my own fault that I didn't look on the map, so I had to call one of you all yesterday to find out how to get to Jackson Mill, and they said, we'll tell you how to get there if you promise to speak when you get there. So I had some second thoughts maybe about not coming. But it has worked out very well. As Jackie was saying, my name is Jack Donovan, and I'm from Greensboro. I do work as a family counselor at Fellowship Hall in Greensboro. And I have to admit that I'm probably about the happiest guy in the whole room tonight. Because everything in my life has been working out absolutely beautifully over the last couple of years. It's taken a lot of years for that to happen, but it is working out well now. And my task tonight, I guess, is not to tell you about Fellowship Hall and family counseling, because that's not what you want to hear. At least that's not what I want to tell you. Because my task tonight is to tell you who Jack Donovan is and where he's at right now. That's most important for you, I think, because in order to meet the requirements of Al-Anon, it requires that I share my experience, strength, and hope with you. That was my higher power giving you a little hope. Funny, when Jackie and I were talking, I said, you can introduce me as Jack Donovan. She said, no, I'll introduce you as Jack D for anonymity's sake, and then you can tell your last name if you want to. And so while I was sitting here I hate sitting up on a dais like this anyway. I'm always afraid my fly is open or something like that. I still hate it. But only those of you who are watching me, you know, as I look like I was calm. I'm not. But when I thought about the anonymity aspect of it and getting up and say Jack Donovan, I had to realize that I am breaking a couple of people's anonymity. The alcoholics that I'm here for, a wife whom I'm no longer with, a daughter, several uncles, an ex-husband-in-law of my present wife, and a few people like that don't care that I break their anonymity because they're either in the program or they're dead. The only two that they would be concerned about are my mother and father, because they're still drinking and they don't think they're alcoholics. And of course, as we know, I can't call them alcoholics, but I have to suggest that for 84 years they've had a drinking problem. And somebody once told me that maybe you can't call an alcoholic, they have to do that themselves, but I always remember what somebody told me once, that if you walk like a duck and you quack like a duck, you're probably a duck. And my mother and father quack like ducks. My father doesn't walk anymore, he simply sits and watches TV. And I'm glad that I can kind of laugh about it. I'm glad to hear you laugh about it, because I still have trouble talking about my mother and father. I have trouble talking about a lot of little things, because some of my feelings come out pretty quickly when I talk about my past life, and my mother and father have a great deal to do with it. You see, I am one of that special breed of cat that is an only child of Catholic Irish alcoholic parents. CIA, they call that. Where I come from. And since as a male Al-Anon member, and those of you who are, those two or three of you who are male Al-Anon, you kind of know what it's like to be around AA and Al-Anon all the way, because we're constantly being taken as one of those. Well, I'm pretty happy to suggest that if I had just drank a little bit more, I think I probably could have made it. There's no doubt about that in my mind. I feel very grateful for my first wife's alcoholism, as does she at this point, because she's coming up on 11 years of sobriety in AA now. Which makes it about almost 12 years in Al-Anon for me, because I was in Al-Anon before she got into AA, with both feet, that is. She was around it when Al-Anon, but she didn't get in it until after I got in it. But that gets into a whole other subject of slips and relapses and such things, and I don't like to talk about that, because when I start talking about how long I've been sober in Al-Anon, it may have been only 5 minutes. So it's hard to say that I've been in the program for that long. But I do have to start out by talking about my parents, because that's where I started from. We have to tell what it was like, what happened, and where we are now. And what it was like then was what I thought normal. My wife, I guess for the first time we were talking about today, she asked, had I ever heard of Al-Anon before I got into Al-Anon? I said, no, never. Never even heard of it. And I said, beyond that, I said, in spite of the fact that my family, the Donovans and my mother's side, which are the Sheepers, the Irish and the Germans together, just try to outdo each other on drinking all my life, I thought that was perfectly normal. That was what people did, not in their spare time, but in their time. You do it all the time. That was entertainment, if you will, for us in my childhood. And now, of course, now I know, in looking back on it, that one of the problems with that sort of a childhood was that I had no role model in my developing years. I was alone, no doubt about it, right from the beginning. I remember, we're talking about the other day, a silly little happening where I used to play out behind the house all by myself, and we had a big backyard full of gravel and a big 10-car garage behind us, and I used to stand out there when I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, I guess, and I used to line my little lead soldiers up along in front of the garage, and I'd throw rocks at them. That was my war every day. That was what I did. Another cute little habit I had, a game that I had, was I used to take the old card table. Some of you remember those card tables with four legs, and a checker cloth top. Remember those? That's what we had. And I used to set that up, and then I used to hang newspapers down from the sides of that thing to make a house for myself. And I would cut myself a little door in the newspaper, then I'd go inside and sit there by myself. That was my fun. It wasn't too much later, surprisingly, that my father must have picked up on that, because my father began to realize that I was picking up on the same kind of personality that he had. And he thought that was great, because he said, that is the way to do it. Because he said, one thing you're going to have to remember as you grow up is that a people are no damn good. And so I went back in my house and I sat down. I didn't come back out again. Because, you see, he and my mother were people too. He didn't catch that, but he was telling me something that really stood out for the rest of my life, because I couldn't trust them either. Because they were never around. They were constantly arguing, threatening each other with knives and all sorts of things in the kitchen while I was trying to sleep at night, pulling the covers up over my head. You see it written in the Aletine books. That was me. But there wasn't any Aletine then for me. And in fact, there wasn't anything around for me at the time to begin to develop any sort of a character at all. I was a total introvert. I had the tremendous sensitivity of the Irish and the tremendous stubbornness of the Germans put together. I was stubbornly sensitive. Everything hurt me at a very low pain threshold. I was bothered by everything. And so I withdrew and I isolated, and I maintained that isolation for most of my young life. I had no close friends. There were a couple of girls that I looked at from a distance in my developing years. Obviously, I wasn't totally introverted. But nothing at all happened until I got to be about 14. And then I happened to spy the gal across the street. I could see her out the paper window of my... of my little house, and all I could see was she was going on dates with these guys who had cars, and of course I was only 15, so I was way behind on that one. But lo and behold, I just kept my eye on that gal, because she was the perfect one for me. She was the cheerleader, she was blonde, she was stacked, she was everything that I wanted in out of life. this reminds me of my wife this morning. I have to break in a little bit because she said that she wouldn't really have to come tonight to hear this, because she's heard it all before in the Volkswagen when I kept telling her a year and a half ago. I was telling her my mother has never loved me. And that's my whole story, really, because that is the problem. I was looking for another mother, I guess, in this gal across the street. I never wanted to venture out into the marketplace to try to find a girl that I could relate to. I just picked the one across the street and just kept hoping that she'd see me. And lo and behold, my higher power at that time, that I had no conversations with whatsoever, lo and behold, my father happened to buy the car that she liked. And that was all there was to it, because she wanted to go for a ride in that new car one day. And lo and behold, I took her for a ride, and 5 or 10 years later, we were married. It was just like that. Because she wanted exactly what I wanted. Because the only thing that I could imagine life was all about was for you to get married, to have a house or two, because at those times people had what they called camps, which were extra homes. Now we call them summer places. Two cars, which was relatively new for those days, and also a couple kids, boy and a girl. And that's exactly what she wanted. So we decided that since we had so much in common, we would get married. She was just on the rebound from some guy that had tossed her around, and I was on the rebound from a mother who never loved me, I guess. So by 23, I was married, and we made a wonderful couple. We did all those things and got all those things that I was talking about. But Jack Donovan didn't know who he was, and his wife didn't know who she was either, unfortunately. But the sensitivity that I had gained from my Irish ancestry, and perhaps the stubbornness that I gained from my German ancestry, stuck with me. I did get through college and went on to be an industrial designer. Now, most of you don't even know what that is, and I'll be honest with you, I don't either. But I was one for 20 years, and I still don't know what one is. But I was one because, and this is how my whole life has really been in my control, as you can probably tell. When it came time for me to go to college, my old maid aunt, who was living with us at the time, parentheses, also alcoholic, end parentheses, worked at Syracuse University, where I was born, up in Syracuse, New York. Which, by the way, is where they don't put amen after the Serenity Prayer. She took me up to Syracuse University because she was a cleaning lady there, and she thought that since she cleaned the registrar's office, that perhaps she could guide me into selecting the right course to take. And so she and I went up there, and I just kept my mouth shut, and she did all the talking, and all of a sudden I ended up being an industrial designer for 20 years. I don't even know how I got into it. Looking back, I know now they needed bodies for a new course that they had started, and I was it. So there we go, another 20 years shot out of the life that I had nothing to do with. But by that time, I was able to accrue the house, the two cars, never did get the extra home, but never needed it. Two kids, boy and a girl, and everything else that we could possibly want, including a lot of entertainment. My wife and I entertained and entertained and entertained, and then in between entertainments, we entertained. We spent more money and drank more booze together than anybody that age, I would think, at that time. So what happened is, all of a sudden, 5 or 6 years after our marriage, we finally decided that we should have a child, just about the time that we ran out of money, because we couldn't go anymore, so we figured, well, what else is there to do but settle down and have a family? So we did that. So our son came into the world, and we entered bankruptcy at the same time. I got a brand new job in Philadelphia, moved all the way down from Syracuse to Philadelphia, which is moving my way south, which is what I've been trying to do all my life. There I became a design consultant with a large chemical company. And that chemical company did for me what my God had always intended to do. It created a personality for Jack Donovan. Because they said, Jack, put a suit on, some shoes, get yourself a company car, and here's a plastic credit card, and you can go out and be anybody you want to be. And brother, that's all I needed. That's exactly what I needed, because finally I found out who I was. I could be miserable as heck all weekend, but come Monday morning, when I put that suit on and go out and get my company car with my plastic credit card and my little pocket wallet with a notepad in it and my cross pens, I was a brand new guy. I could be anybody, go anywhere I wanted to do, spend any kind of money I wanted to, because nobody checked up on me. So I finally found out that my father was right. People are no damn good. And I was one of them. Because I started being just as dishonest as everybody else that I met was, according to me at that time. I decided if everybody was going to be hypocritical, I could find the same route myself. And so that's what I did. So I started having what I called fun. My wife's personality had not developed any at all because she'd been stuck with the two kids that I gave her. What her personality was developing on at the time was the booze that she and I was drinking. Looking back, I can't imagine how she could have done anything but turn into an alcoholic. because I know now what some of the characteristics are of the potential alcoholic, and she and I both had it. As I said before, she had not developed the alcoholism to the extent of having to go in for treatment and find AA, and for me to find Al-Anon, I probably would have joined her, but there's no way of knowing that. I don't know whether I have that X factor or not, and I might say that 11 years ago I chose not to try to find out, so I stopped any mood-changing drugs 11 years ago myself, so I decided I didn't want to play Russian roulette anymore myself. That's my choice. Not a recommendation, just my choice. But when my wife did develop alcoholism, she came to me one day and she said, "Something's got to be done. I am an alcoholic." And of course, being the faithful husband, I provided the same symptoms as all of you did in the beginning, and I said, "No, you're not. You may have a drinking problem, but you're no alcoholic." Now, of course, I, looking back on it, even then, I could see that there was a lot of times when she was sleeping when I came home. A lot of times when she'd call me at the office and say that she was feeling bad and I had to come home and take care of the kids. A lot of times when she was away early at parties and I wondered where she had gone and she was up in bed sleeping. A lot of times when she was up in the middle of the night and I could hear clinking of glasses and I said, "Isn't she nice up doing the dishes in the middle of the night?" But I denied it totally at that time. And I was really against anything that was smacked of the problems of alcoholism. And I guess in looking back now, I can see why. I was totally conditioned by my Irish-German parents to accept drinking, heavy drinking, as perfectly normal. To find somebody like my wife, and I will have to underline that, my wife, who couldn't control drinking, was something that was impossible for Jack Donovan to accept. Because she was my wife, just like the house was my house, the kids were my kids, the cars were my cars. She was one of the things that Jack Donovan had. That was my wife. And for my wife to have alcoholism would be about the same thing as for my septic tank to get clogged up. It was something that was wrong with Jack Donovan's life. And that was absolutely against the rules. Absolutely. Couldn't allow that. So I started at that moment with a process of denial of her alcoholism, which carried me through at least 7 years of Al-Anon. Now that has nothing to say about the qualities of Al-Anon. It says a heck of a lot about how sick I was when I came in. I often think a lot of people can remember the first meeting I sat through, they say, some 12 years ago, was step two or three or something. I don't remember a thing for 4 years. I can't remember anything about Al-Anon for 4 years, but I went every week. I also went to a step meeting every week, which is unusual. My higher power already was seeing to my recovery. I was also sitting with a bunch of beautiful gray-haired old ladies, and that wasn't the reason I went to Al-Anon. I went to Al-Anon to meet some beautiful young ladies. Now I know there are beautiful young ladies in Al-Anon, but my God was, again, taking care of me in those first 2 years. That first group had to put a lock on the bathroom door because they'd never had a man there before. But I did stay. I stayed, and I think looking back now, I know why I stayed, because my ego was up there with the best of them. And I stayed because my wife was in AA, and she was recovering. And the only way I could be a part of that and take any credit for her sobriety was for me to get in Al-Anon. as long as I stayed in the program, I could take credit for her getting sober. Which is a pretty strange way of looking at it, but that's the way I stayed there for at least 4 or 5 years, I think. It didn't take long for me in Al-Anon, once I came to, my sponsor told me about the second step aspect of it, where you break up those first few words, where I came to Al-Anon for 4 years and then finally came to, and about 8 years later came to believe that it could do me some good. Because it took at least 7 years for me to realize that I had been insane. There was no reason for me to believe that I, or that my life was unmanageable. Some people also talk about that little joke where it says, it admitted that my wife, that we're powerless over alcohol and that our wives had become unmanageable. Because that's exactly what happened in my life. The only thing that was unmanageable in my life was my wife. Everything else was perfectly okay. And now again, looking back, hindsight tells me that if there's a spot on your carpet and you don't want to get rid of the carpet, you cut out that spot and put a new one in. And that's what I attempted to do for 7 years. Because I tried my darndest to get some nice lady to cut that hole out of my carpet. Because you see, I didn't have the guts to do anything about my situation except get angry and resentful over it. And I maintained that anger and resentment toward my wife for all the 7 years of her AA and my Al-Anon experience. In spite of the fact that I said I was thoroughly practicing these 12 steps, I still was having one heck of a problem because nothing was changing insofar as my wife and my relationship was concerned. She was getting sober, but we were not happy. I did not have what I wanted in life. And looking back now, what I wanted was the same life that I had grown up with. I wanted that same drinking, fun life. And looking back again, now I can see that when my wife first said that I am an alcoholic, my mind computed that if she's alcoholic, that means she can't drink. If she can't drink, I don't drink. If I don't drink, how am I going to have any fun? It was just that quick. And so Jack, at that moment, as I say, decided that what I had to do was to get rid of that alcohol. So I started a long process of trying to change the alcoholic into the fantasy wife that I'd always wanted. And as most of you know, since you've all tried the same thing in one form or another, that doesn't work. I could not change that wife into the person that I had always wanted. She found her own sobriety, she found her own set of values, her own moral system, her own basis for living, her own basis for her happiness. And some years after her AA involvement, she began to realize that she didn't need me. Part of my story is a 2-year depression. Way back there when I lost a job in Philadelphia. I lost the job because I was preoccupying myself 24 hours a day with my alcoholic problem. And occupying myself with that problem did not allow me to spend the kind of time and put the effort into my job that I needed to, that it deserved. I lost that job in Philadelphia and I decided that the best thing for me to do was, in my still omnipotent, egotistical way, decided the best thing for me to do was to win business for myself, and I did that. 2 years later, I went bankrupt because I was in a total depression for the 2 years. There wasn't any way of running any sort of a business. My business in those days involved standing at my kitchen door, looking out through the window, wondering when the world was going to change. And it never did. My world never changed. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what I was going to do to make a change. And yet I was still going to Al-Anon, still talking the talk, but not walking the walk. I was already by that time group representative. And in fact, toward the end, I was even district representative because I could say all the right things. And it was Jack Donovan who was speaking. It wasn't the higher power that was speaking. It was the kid who lived inside the little newspaper house that could keep the mask on, tell people what they wanted to hear, to get the love that he knew was there if he said the right thing. And I always had that ability to get love, what I now know as conditional love, under the right conditions. If I said and did the right things, I got love. Problems with my parents. My mother, I should say, I know she loves me. She gives me $50 every August 28th on my birthday, so that proves how much she loves me. I can't even hug her now. It's about like hugging a fire hydrant. But she does love me. But she doesn't know how to display it, you know. There's no warmth or sentimentality in that relationship. And she's now 82, still drinking her whiskey sours. No, I shouldn't say that. That's part of, my God, she quit 3 weeks ago. So that's really part of my story. It's almost jumping ahead. Forget that she's now sober. But that love was something that I fought for a long time. And finally, as I say, my wife had to give me up. My job gave me up. In fact, society gave me up, I guess. I lost all my friends, lost everybody, except for my wife and kids, and ultimately, I lost them, too. By the time we separated, my kids were old enough so that they could be generally on their own. My son had gone into the Navy. My daughter had decided she would move in with my wife. And that worked out okay, because it left me free and easy to do the kind of living that I had always wanted to do. And so that's what I did. For a long time, I was trying to be that full-time hero that I'd always thought I should be. By that time, I was beginning, however, to get to see some glimmerings in Al-Anon of a higher power. I was beginning to see some glimmerings of the insanity that I'd gone through because I didn't have my alcoholic to justify my behavior anymore. I began to see that I was still behaving insanely even though she wasn't around. And so as they say, bring the body around, the mind will follow. Apparently it works because I kept bringing the body around every week for the last 12 years, and finally Al-Anon and the 12 steps did begin to work. I began to realize that indeed that I had been insane. There were times that you can't believe where I would prostitute myself, if you will, insofar as my feelings were concerned, in order to get what I felt was my need at that moment. I did. I lied. I cheated. I stole. I did everything. Perhaps all in a minor way, but still no different than anybody else. When they ask about, is there any difference between being a beer alcoholic and a whiskey alcoholic, it's like being a little bit pregnant. You either are or you aren't. And I guess that's what it comes down to for me with the dishonesty and everything else. Because now I see from the program the most important aspects of the program that I use on a daily basis is the same basis that I believe Bill Wilson used when he devised the program. Because I look at the honesty, purity, love, and unselfishness as the basis for my rejuvenation. Certainly an understanding of my God, my higher power, has come over the last few years. And it's come to the point where I have felt well enough over the last few years to get into the family counseling, to try to share a little bit of my Al-Anon knowledge with people who are suffering, living with alcoholics. And I must admit that with all humility, because the only thing that I have found necessary in my occupation is to follow the 12 steps for myself. If I can keep myself well on a daily basis, if I can stay on top of me, then I can be of some benefit to other people. Because as long as I stay on top of me and do not let my emotions run the show, I can be a good reflector for those people who need help. Insofar as the steps are concerned, I've used all of them. I have had, in the beginning, I had thought I had at least 50 spiritual awakenings. My spiritual awakenings came like buses. They came on a regular schedule. Every time I heard a word in Al-Anon that I thought was the answer, I said, aha, that's it. Now I've got the whole program. And the next day I found myself flat on my face again. So I had to go back to the step one again. And I've gone back to step one probably at least once a week for all the 12 years I've been in Al-Anon. Because that is the major problem for me, is the total acceptance of my powerlessness over my life. I am powerless over you. I am powerless over certainly my alcoholics. I am powerless over my own recovery. I cannot dictate my own recovery. I have to let it happen. I have to let go and let God help me recover. But I have had recently the kind of spiritual awakenings which I feel are the realistic ones, and those are the ones where I have come to grips with who Jack Donovan is. Because I know now that I am not better than you, but again, I am no less than you. I know that you are the same as I am. You have the same problems I do, whether you're alcoholic, whether you're non-alcoholic, whether you're civilian, if you want to call it that. Our major problem together is living. To be able to get through from birth to death comfortably without hurting anybody else is the trick. And that trick, I believe, is something that Bill put down in the 12 steps. Because that is the guideline, as far as I'm concerned, for being able to get in touch with me, to recognize my own faults, to be able to make restitution for those faults, and to be able to help other people. That, to me, is the basis for a new life, the kind of life which I feel is necessary. All the time and effort that I put in my childhood trying to live with my alcoholic parents, all the time that I put in pain living with my alcoholic wife, and all the pain that I provided her and my parents over those years, I sort of feel it has come to fruition just recently when it was discovered. And I say discovered, even in my professionalism, I still practice faithful denial patterns as outlined in the Al-Anon program when my 18-year-old daughter developed as an alcoholic. She just recently went through a treatment center. She is now 90-day sober, going to meetings every day, and doing very well, thank you. And in fact, she's planning on being married in October, so that will be the culmination. And she's marrying, guess what, a nice guy in AA. A nice guy that I couldn't have chosen better had I manufactured him myself. And I probably would have tried that years ago. Because I did manipulate my son and my daughter as well. It was only just a few months ago when I was talking about my life story that it became pretty evident that I was talking about my entire life, and nowhere in my life did I even mention my kids. And all of a sudden it hit me that the reason I didn't mention them was because I really never had a thing to do with it. Not one thing. They were there, but that's it. I didn't do anything with them, never talked with them, nothing. You know what the problem was? Most of you alcoholics can identify this. My preoccupation was with guess who? Me. 100% preoccupied with Jack Donovan. I could no more accept my alcoholic wife as a part of Jack Donovan's life because that wasn't the way Jack Donovan deserved to live. I could not see that Jack had a problem. I could not see that God was tapping me on the shoulder with the alcoholics in my family and telling me that I was the one that had to do some changing. But as they say, some are thicker and some are sicker. I guess I was both, because it took me a long time before I began to realize that I had to change. And I was in the Al-Anon program to do what it says. I started working the steps. I finally had the courage to finish up on the third step. And you know why it took me so long to do the third step? Do you know what the next one is? Nobody wants to complete the third one, because if you complete the third one, you have to go on to the fourth one. Well, I took the fourth one. Most of you Al-Anons, I'm not sure whether AA has this, but the Al-Anon program has a little checklist of debits and credits. And that's what we call a four-step inventory, a very simplified one. And they say keep it simple, and so I felt that's the way to do it. Keep it simple, I just made the little check marks on that sheet, and I determined that there were several things that were wrong with Jack. Nothing of any terrible import, but and I used that for a long time. Until all of a sudden, one son of a gun, and I almost wish he was here, because I haven't seen him since, but he was one of those guys that I really had trouble accepting for a while, was one of those double-hatters in Al-Anon, one of those Al-Anon AA people, because he was so damn smart that really bothered me. He had the program so good that it really frosted my cake. And one night we were talking about the four-step inventory, and he said, "Did you ever write it down?" I said, "Yes, I've taken that checklist, I've written it down." He said, no, I mean, written it down, you know, with a pad and a pencil and written it all down like a biography, you know, from year one. And I said, well, really had me. I couldn't go any further. But then, of course, my German stubbornness said, if that's what I got to do, then by God, I'll show him. So I got myself a big pad of paper and about 10 pencils, and I sat down and I wrote it out. It took me about 2 months, but I did, because I had a little trouble getting through it very easily. But I did write it out. And by God, it sure did make a difference, because I could begin to see the patterns throughout my life. I could begin to see the problems for Jack Donovan from year one that developed and maintained throughout my life, that dictated how I reacted in relationships with other people. And most of it was plain fear. That's where I was coming from. Plain fear. And maybe my father did help it when he says people are no damn good, because boy, that fitted right in with my claim. Never joined anything in my life. Boy Scouts, the why, nothing. Because I never wanted to be competitive. Because if you're competitive, you might lose. So I never wanted to play. I never wanted to play life because I was afraid I'd lose. I avoided playing life. I just looked at it and pretended for all the years. It's only been recently that I have been able to use the Al-Anon program to its full extent. It's only been recently I've come into contact with a clear higher power for Jack Donovan. Something perhaps I can share with you is a little bit of what that higher power is for me. To some people it may be a little strange, but for me it is, it's almost like a TV show. My higher power provides me with a setting every moment of every day. And my higher power puts you into it. You, for me, are a figment of my imagination. I can't change you at all, any more than I can change the soap operas on TV. I have to accept you as you are. The only thing I can do is to change how I react to you. And if I can change me so that I can either accept or reject you on a moment-to-moment basis, I can keep me happy. And that's the only way I can look at it. And my higher power does this as he feels that he is providing me with wisdom on a daily basis. That's the wisdom we talk about in the Serenity Prayer, I think. Is the wisdom to know the difference, to know what I have to accept and know what I have to change in order for me to be comfortable and happy and serene on a moment-to-moment basis. If I can continue to maintain that, and I can't always maintain that touch with my higher power, I try, but I can't always maintain that, I find that my emotions do many times get in charge, and I start operating as I have years ago, as an immature Jack Donovan. But if I can stay up in my head, and if I can operate from my intellect as opposed to my emotions, then I can choose my emotions. I can choose to feel in certain situations. But it's very difficult for me to maintain that attitude all the time. Right now I'm having some difficulty with my mother. I will end up with that because I touched on her before. Because for all these years I have attempted to avoid my mother's situation. My father is now senile. He only has a beer once in a while when my mother provides him one. He doesn't even like it anymore. He sits and watches TV and doesn't even know what he's watching. But I can love him, and he says he loves me, and that's as much as I can do now. My mother is still drinking, up to 3 weeks ago, and finally I got to the point of writing her a letter. I wrote her a letter, and I sent her some AA literature, and I suggested that it's not too late, because up until that time, that's what I felt, that it was too late. But I began to see 70 and 80 year old people going through Fellowship Hall and going out sober and going out serene to a new life. Maybe a short one, but certainly much better than anything that they'd ever seen or felt before. And I began to wonder why my mother couldn't have that too. And so I decided I would take the risk of telling her my feelings about it. And in fact, in the letter, I suggested that I loved her enough to tell her this, even though perhaps she might take it the wrong way and decide that she didn't love me. And so I sent the letter, and then a week later, screwed up my courage to call her. I called her on Sunday morning, which is my usual way, because that's the only time I can talk to her when she's coherent. And most of you alcoholics can probably guess what she said. She said, "Well, the letter came kind of late. I quit 3 weeks ago." The reason that I had written the letter was because she had told me about the fact that she was having liver problems, and I felt that after 84 years of drinking as heavy as she did, she's lucky she's living that long, much less having liver problems. And so on the phone, she said, "I quit 3 weeks ago." And she said, "I'm still having some bad feelings down there." I said, I can't imagine why. I said, well, you know, after 84 years, you know, that liver's not going to get ready to get well in 2 weeks. So give it some time and get to some meetings. She said, meetings? I said, yes, meetings. No, I'm just going to quit. That's all. Not going to, maybe only a beer once in a while. So as you can tell, I'm not terribly optimistic about my mother's first year chip, but but then again, I feel that my higher power says that my problem is my problem, her problem is her problem, and there's nothing I can do about it except to tell her how I feel about it, tell her how I feel about her drinking, and let her do what she needs to do from there. Her higher power's got her through 84 years. If mine can get me through 84, I'll be very happy. Recently, I have to end with this because I'm probably running over, and I know you're terribly warm, as am I. I do have to suggest that my higher power has recently made me very happy because after my loss of wife, children, job, and everything else, finally I did have my higher power direct me to Greensboro, North Carolina, where I got a job working with people whom I feel are very, very special. And I'll tell you very quickly why I feel that they're special. I feel anybody who works in the alcoholism treatment field are special because they're treating people I love. But most of all, I feel that those people who are also treating the family members as well as the alcoholic are extra special. And that was why I felt touched by my higher power when they chose me to come down and help them in what I think is a very worthy program. Because I see helping the suffering family members of alcoholics as the back door into getting alcoholics into treatment. And I'm not alone in that thought. And so I feel that I am doing something worthwhile. I feel that Fellowship Hall is. I feel the entire treatment field is doing something worthwhile. But I have not given up my Al-Anon. I'm glad I didn't give it up because I needed it badly when all of a sudden my daughter developed her alcoholism behavior patterns. It took me a while to get my head back on straight then, but ultimately I did. I wasn't alone in that problem over the last few months because sometime about a year and a half ago I met and finally cajoled into marrying me my present wife, Joan, who is also an Al-Anon member. Her ex-husband is in treatment in AA, should I say, in the program, and doing very well too. We are not necessarily friendly, but at least I do know that he's in the program. They say you have to love everybody, but you don't have to like everybody. And he doesn't like me. But I feel extra special happy because God has provided this old man with a very sweet, young, sensitive wife who is normally taken as an Alateen member. But many times I must admit that her serenity and her grasp of the program is a definite benefit to this old man. In spite of my years, in spite of my Al-Anon experience, I many times need a lot of help in maintaining myself as a human being. And she is, as I say, my gift from Al-Anon and my higher power. I want to simply end by telling you how much I have enjoyed being here, how much I have enjoyed the opportunity to spring into action, as they say. That was the gist of the conference, and as far as I'm concerned, I look forward to coming up here, but I always kind of concern myself with going to conferences without doing something, so my higher power fixed that up too. Fixed it up in a very special way when I talked with Dottie on the phone yesterday and I said I was coming up. She asked if I would like to speak because they needed a speaker. I said I would. And then and only then I asked her if my wife and I would be sharing quarters here. And she said, no, you'd be in the dormitories. And I said, that's sad. But then Daddy and my higher power said, but I have good news for you. Since you are a speaker, I can put you up at the lodge. So everything worked out beautifully. So if you ever want to know where we are, we're over at the lodge. But we'll try to get to some of the activities. It's going to be called The Short Happy Life of Jack Donovan. But I want to tell you all that I love you very much more than I ever could have before, Al-Anon. I want to thank you very much because you are my God as such. God speaks to me through you. If it weren't for you, I would not hear from my higher power. I can talk to him, she or it, however you want to talk about it, but he only talks to me through you, at meetings and between meetings when I know enough to listen to you. So for all the help that you've been to me and for all the attendance that you've given me in this hot hour, I want to thank you very much and tell you I love you all very much. Come down and see us in Greensboro. Thank you.